Hello, my name is Dima Levenchuk, and I am from Seattle, Washington. And if there would be one person who I would love to work with and to learn from, would be Robert Rodriguez.
48, 48 hours to go. If you're looking for a hero, then this is the show. Where did they come from? What do they know? It's an origin story. Let's go.
All right, welcome everyone. It's 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories. I'm your host, Kirk Nordenstrom. And today I have a very special guest with me. He's been doing the 48. Well, he did the 48 pretty regularly for a number of years, you know, and then got a career and couldn't do it as much, you know, as he should be.
Gotta pay all the fancy toys, you know.
Oh yeah, this is my dear friend Dima Levenchuk.
Whoop.
How you doing, Dima?
Doing good, my friend. Thank you very much for inviting me to chat.
Yeah, it's 48 Veterans Month, so we're talking with people who have done the 48 a number of times and have developed a career in the industry outside of it, which oftentimes prevents them from doing what they should be doing.
Double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, but
dang it.
It's always a source of pride for us, you know, when someone says, hey, I can't do it, I'm too busy with work. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, if that work is being a chef or a bartender, like, no, you find time to do the 48. But if you're
exactly
working in the field, then we excuse it. Otherwise, we come to your house and punch you repeatedly in the throat.
Come join our shoots. No, it's, you know, 48 been always kind of like very interesting training ground for all kind of filmmakers. And I think, I'm not sure if you guys knew the future of how video production is going to be happening when the 48 was created, because video production went from being like, you know, this big convoluted machine of filmmakers to
yeah,
small little pocket version size of video production.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, just the changes. So I started doing it here in Seattle, mm-hmm, in 2005. The 48 started in 2001 in Washington, D.C. And even in 2005, people were shooting on mini DV camcorders, mm-hmm, and handing me mini DV tapes and you know, all sorts of cumbersome media, DVDs that frequently didn't write properly.
Oh, gosh.
And
sounds so prehistoric, right?
I know. All this 2997 video and you know, just a mess of different codecs. And yeah, now you shoot on your iPhone, you know, your Samsung, Android, Google phone, and mm-hmm, we now have digital delivery.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to hand in your paperwork physically. Just go to cinema48.com. And
that's part of the fun. That's part of the fun trying to get to that finish line. You know, this is like a marathon.
It really is. It's a mixed bag.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it is such a ritual of the 48, the rush to the finish line.
You got to spill some blood on your way to the drop-off line, you know.
Well, we've heard in recent years some, you know, pretty gruesome stories, mm-hmm, of people getting hurt, getting,
yeah,
to drop-off. And
that's not fun.
No. It's safety. The safety of our participants is far more important than the ritual, as fun as it is. So
yeah,
I think city producers are going to find a way to put some sort of event together where people can come and kind of hang out and reminisce, mm-hmm, about their weekend while digitally uploading everything.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. You got to keep up with the time right now.
Yeah, I think Chris and I, we're just going to go broadcast from solo.
Okay. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, do play by play. Like, we can see the team so and so is. Right. I'll mention Team Combat Wombats because I think it's the best team name ever.
That's a very nice one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Gets a very good visual.
Oh, yeah.
Are they wearing helmets, shields?
They don't need it. They're basically armored. as is.
Okay, we need to figure out how to mutate wombats into a life-like, you know, like a truck-sized creature.
Well, you'd have to devolve them, because during the Australian Pleistocene epoch, yeah, there were wombats the size of hippopotamus.
See, where's happening right now? Where is it right now? Like, we need that. I want that.
Yeah. And they were basically the same temperament that they are now, just these giant herbivore tunnelers.
Now, do they produce milk as well? Because you can have
they're mammals. One.
Oh, yeah. See, now go in the battle and that thing, come off, have some wombat milk. Straight from the source, you know. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I have a friend in Australia right now on a honeymoon. Like, go, please go nuzzle a wombat for me. I know too much about wombats.
This is the wombat episode.
Ever since I heard a particular Police song when I was like 9, I've been fascinated with wombats.
Yeah. It's just a fun thing to like, just a wombat.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And just these giant pacifist, well, they're not giant, they're just these snuggly pacifist burrowers.
Yeah. Maybe it could be a prop or something for upcoming 48 to use a wombat or a picture of a wombat or something. I don't know. Somebody has to find a wombat.
It'd be easier for the Australian teams.
Ah, that'd be so cool.
Well, anyway, let's get down to it. So what were you doing before the 48? Because I know the 48 was your introduction to filmmaking.
Yeah, well, 48, and when I just started getting into filmmaking, 48 was literally like 6 months after I was like, let me start doing the filmmaking stuff. My origin story is not as cool as people saying. Ever since I was a little kid, my dad gave me a camera, I shot the movies, like none of that happened. I got into filmmaking in my, I think it was like mid-20s. I was working at Boeing, building airplanes. I was studying physics and math. And, you know, it's totally something different that not many people have that origin stories, I guess, you know, maybe some, but no. I was just kind of doing my own thing and learning science and how the world works. And my friend at Boeing was really interested in filmmaking. And I thought it was just all about, you know, only Spielbergs can make movies and all these big, big name directors. And like, I didn't know that their screenplays happen. Like, you know, to make a movie, you need to have a screenplay. Like, I didn't know anything about filmmaking. Like, I don't think I ever, like, really hit record on the camera before.
And then you just knew how, like, atoms and electrons and protons work.
Yeah, like, that's what I was interested in. I was nerding out on space, man. That was my high, you know? Black holes? Heck yeah, I could talk about that. Talk about, like, frame rates. I'm like, I don't even know what that means, you know? So my friend's like, hey, you know, I kind of want to get filmmaking. I was like, this is totally new subject to me. I, you know, I'll be more than happy to help you out with this stuff. And I started kind of doing a research, my scientific approach to the filmmaking. Like, you know, how do you actually make this happen? And I saw like, oh, you have to write a screenplay for that. Because I didn't know anyone in the community. I just say, you know what, I could probably write something down. And I wrote a screenplay I gave to one of my friends who was a comic book writer. He read my screenplay. And he says, well, Dima, no offense, but this is garbage. You can do way better than this. Yeah. And I say, what do you mean this is garbage? This is, I'm not down with that, you know? So, like, and I started learning about the story structure and, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And eventually, you know, because I didn't have anybody to share this passion with, I wasn't even dating my current wife right now at that point. Who was a huge help through the whole process.
Yeah, but Hillary is awesome.
Yeah, Hillary is.
It's great to work with her and, well, just to know her in general. She's fantastic.
She's amazing. But yeah, it was just by myself. It was just me and my coworker. We're just like, you know, let's figure out how to make movies. And he was more interested in directing portion of it. And so I kind of like took on the technical side of it. So I started learning about the cameras and sound and all this kind of stuff, just to be a helping hand to this person to achieve his dream of, you know, making movies. And, you know, as time went further and further down the line, I was like, oh, I started getting more interested in video production. And 6 months later, I bought this book, and I keep telling you about the story. I bought a book about how you make a movie, you know, on the cheap. And one of the chapters was mentioning 48-hour film project. And I was like, that's weird and strange. I wonder what that is. And found out that there is one in Seattle. And ba-bam, next thing I know, I'm making 48-hour films.
That was, what, 2009?
I think so, yeah. It's my mid-20s, just kind of got blurred because filmmaking stole all of my life from me. I became so obsessed about this.
Yes, you did. Yes, it did.
It's, you know, it's like one thing people got to realize, if, you know, people who getting into hobbies, if they want to make careers, start with whatever, you got to become very, very obsessed about it. You can't just kind of, can I curse this?
Yeah.
This podcast? Yeah, you can't half-ass
it. You fucking can.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, you can't really half-ass and stuff if you really something, if you want to, you know, go for it, give it a shot. You really kind of become, you gotta become your obsession at that point. And, you know, I would work, like I say, I worked at Boeing. I would come after work and I would edit movies until like from 6 p.m. until like 2 a.m. just pulling clips from internet somewhere, like try to make music videos just to see how editing works, just
making
learning as much
as I can. Postmodern masterpiece.
Just learning, just like I saw, like, you know, I started using YouTube a lot, trying to figure out tutorials, because that's when all the tutorials on YouTube started becoming a thing, and just learning as much as I can.
YouTube has become like film school for people.
Oh, yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
I use it all the time. If I just recently decided I wanted to start editing the podcast in an actual audio editor, and I started using Audition just because I have it on my PC. And I was like, how do you just do a simple ripple edit? How the fuck? It's only letting me select one track at a time. What the hell is going on? I just want to make a simple ripple edit across three tracks. Easiest thing in the world to do in Resolve or Premiere.
Yeah.
So I go to YouTube and sure enough, like, okay, here's how you do it. You can't actually just do a ripple dissolve or ripple edit where timeline moves. You have to create a gap and then delete it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know, whatever. That's archaic, but YouTube showed me within 10 seconds of searching, I had an answer.
And like this kind of introduction of like this internet knowledge stuff was, I really felt it like a long time ago when I was, I think it was 19 or 20 or something. I worked as a security guard in downtown Seattle. And one of the elevators just froze up on us. Like I couldn't, it was like middle of the night. I didn't know how to restart the elevator. So I looked at the elevator model number, and I went online. It was like when Google was like a first portion of Google, and I Googled the elevator model, how to reset an elevator. And I actually found the instructions on how to reset the elevators.
It's crazy what you
And I was like, you know what? Like, oh my gosh, this is what internet is for. Like, you know, this is before, like, before it became like a number one thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And ever since, I'm like, okay, any kind of questions, just Google it. And you know,
yeah, it's amazing what you can find.
And that's how I got into filmmaking. Like, you know, how do you write a screenplay? And you boom. Right now, there's just like a plethora of information out there on how to do all this stuff. So
yeah.
Any kind of questions you have, just always find on the internet, Google, YouTube, whatever it is. So
yeah, I say when it comes to story structure, you have to look up Dan Harmon's Story Circle. Have you ever checked that out? Yeah, I love it. I mean, I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan because that show is just bizarre. And I just finished watching all of Community finally. Like, oh, okay. I see where the Dan Harmon influence in Rick and Morty is now. And you can see the story circle in every episode.
Yeah. And like, you know, that's, you know, kind of like, you know, talking about double-edged sword, you know, having this access to information is also could be very, very paralyzing because then you just like, okay, these are the rigid borders of stuff that I have to create in, and that kind of takes away creativity, at least for me in my case. You kind of have to you have to learn it and then you kind of forget it about it, you know.
I like that. I like going back to Sid Field's screenplay. It's such a timeless book.
Yep.
And I love the analogy he makes that story structure is just a container.
Mm-hmm.
What you put in it is limitless.
Exactly.
As long as, and the container can even be different shapes, but it needs to have the ability to contain the ingredients.
You gotta have beginning, middle, and end. Now, whatever form it is, whatever form it is, whatever order it is, doesn't matter. But as long as you have those three, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, and the proper things happening in Act One, the proper things happening in Act Two, and you know, Act Three is not going to work if your Act mm-hmm. One sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just love that idea that story structure is a container. What mm-hmm. you put in it is really what matters. It could be a margarita or it could be salt and razor blades.
And what really got me, like, I think was the most interesting aspect of filmmaking for me personally, was how many different forms the story can take. It's not just like a verbal thing. It could be visual, it could be sound, and, you know, and as a filmmaking, like actual film or movie, it's a combination of all of that. And
yeah,
depending on how you can flip between sound, then go to a picture to have a continuation of the same story, just giving you a different medium. That was super interesting to me, seeing how you can manipulate all the stuff, kind of like a weird alchemist.
Yeah.
Like, you know, oh, let me like make this scene, make it very visually interesting or make it very audibly interesting. You can just have a black screen and have a couple of sounds, and that's going to tell you so much story, you know.
The two directors that really stand out for me every time are that can really play with classic story structure using exactly what you said, design, mm-hmm. performance, sound, are Wes Anderson and Edgar Wright. I mean, Shaun of the Dead is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I've read the screenplay and it's bulletproof because, you know, what's on the page is what's up on the screen.
That's amazing.
All those weird little edits, you know, those little transition edits.
All in
that's
there.
That's not accidental. That is not accidental.
Yeah, pre-thought, pre-planned. And
yeah. And they serve a purpose. You know, I just watched Hot Fuzz again the other day. And for the longest time, you know, when Simon Pegg's character is taking the cab to the train to the new town he's going to be working in, mm-hmm. you can see he's going from London to Sanford. And as he's going, technology starts going backwards. You know, it's like a nice high-tech cab. He's got full bars on his cell phone. He gets on the train, and then all of a sudden, it's this old-timey cab, and he has no bars on his phone. It's, yeah. You know, well,
that tells a story right there. That's,
yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's really Act One information. It's actually informing you about the story, about the world. And that's, you know, fantastic storytelling, I think, without saying a word, without exposition. It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, there's so much planning goes when you start trying to say complex stories like that. You got to plan so much, you know. And
yeah,
and that's like one thing I learned from 48 Hour Film Projects is pre-production is your king no matter what happens. Like, you know, you always got to have pre-production. Have like, you know, a month before the actual 48 production, 48 film project. You know, find all the locations, secure all the people, like blah, 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 blah. Find all the gear, like all that happens like weeks or months before the actual 48 competitions. So,
yeah, well, that allows you, once you get the required elements, you can go, okay, we have this and this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And then here's the required elements.
It's not as scary. It's not as scary when you're pulling that line from a hat. Are you still using a hat or a bag to pull the things out? Okay, well, you don't have the super sweaty hand because like, you know, okay, I have at least half of the production is ready to go. You know,
yeah.
And then here are my limits.
Yeah,
and then you just plug it in.
Yeah. Well, you and I, we've done the 4 points together.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the sillier films I think either of us have ever made.
Oh yeah, it was fun. It was so much fun. No rules.
Well, we had Solo Bar at our disposal for a limited amount of time. We got Spy Detective.
Mm-hmm.
And we just went off on a really silly take on Charlie's Angels.
That's right. Well, we knew we were going to use 4 actors.
Yeah.
So we're in your location. So whatever's going to be happening, we have to figure out, okay, this has to happen with 4 people in a bar. Now, what can we build about it?
Exactly.
The further away it gets from what your requirements are with the stuff that you have, the sillier it could become.
Yeah.
Which could be your advantage if you're going for that kind of like not surreal, but kind of like this unusual storytelling.
Yeah.
If you want to do very traditional storytelling, like very classical, it might be a problem. But for silly people like us, you know what? Why not? I found a sewer, you know, two people, let's go, you know.
Well, and then we did it, I think, 2 years later, and it was like right after the election, mm-hmm. and we weren't feeling terribly good about things, and we had yeah. access to the prison cell.
That's right.
at the haunted house.
All the kind of interesting people you meet in this journey, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Yep.
And that one, yeah, we embraced it. All based around the idea of men saying, well, actually.
There you go.
All the time, mansplaining. That was
the
like
mansplaining the whole thing.
The whole thing. And it was great to have Hillary with us because she kept us in check the whole time.
That's right. So you gotta have people who you trust around yeah. you for this kind of stuff because you might get away.
And we'll push back.
Yeah, yeah.
Push back when necessary. And yeah, well, let's get back to your first 48.
Ooh, that's the one with the egg, right?
The egg, yeah.
Oh my gosh. You know, making that video really kind of like helped me to validate that it was possible to be non-traditionalist, quote unquote. And still make something that you can stand behind and be like, you know what? I made it. It was silly. It was fun. It was weird. But I made it. And I'm proud of that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, it was a really kind of funny take on Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, it was Humpty Dumpty huffing paint on top of the wall because Humpty Dumpty did not want to get married. And he got too high and he fell off the wall. Now, how did the idea happen? I have no idea.
You're in your 20s and crazy.
Yeah, it was just like, you know what? We have a wedding dress and we have something else. Like, let's figure something out with this. Oh, yeah, we used... that was my first time trying to figure out how to make CG stuff to put in a face on the egg.
A face on the egg was too much.
Yeah, I can imagine you getting the video and be like, okay, now what is this team? What do they want? what's the idea?
Well, little did you know that you had a sympathetic audience in me. You know, I like the absurd. I like, you know, Monty Python, Kids in the Hall.
We got very lucky with yeah. having the right people seeing this stuff and not yeah. just throwing away and saying, I think somebody just hacked our system and gave us a trash.
Well, then your second one was really funny. Let's talk about, because, well, you won a VFX award for...
Yeah, we got a few things over there. I think we got like music, we got award, we got something else. I forgot. I honestly stopped keeping track because like it was very, very fortunate for us to be able to come up with a project. And every 48 we displayed, we always had some kind of like a little recognition of something, whatever it was. And I'm just very fortunate to have the PKS team to help with us, to help carry that, and poor audience have to sit through all stuff. We actually had like somebody I remember, because our production was called Gritty Flicks, Gritty, Gritty Flicks. First of all, terrible name because since I have an accent, I can't pronounce Gritty Flicks properly, so I sound greedy, like it's a Gritty Flicks. But I think some people started realizing kind of a movies or stories that's Greedy Flicks Day, and I remember our logo came up on one of the things and somebody screamed Shitty Flicks. And I was so happy. I think I should have been get offended by that, but I was like, oh my god, hell yeah, Shitty Flicks, that's even better. But yeah, what was our another one? Was it the one, the B movie, or no,
it was the, I think you had the Western, you had the train track.
Oh, and like my classic. Gosh. That was so dumb for us to do because, yeah, we had to do a Western. And for some reason, we decided, you know, it'd be kind of cool to have like a, not cool, it'd be kind of, it'd be funny to have like two guys fight over a woman who was kidnapped by this crazy bandit psycho. And the person who was kidnapped was my now wife, Hillary. And we decided to, we found like a train track where we can film but I didn't realize how active that train track was. And we had, you know, like, no, we're going to film people. And we had her, like, lay around the train tracks as we're filming. And we had one person standing on the guard trying to listen to the train coming. So it was not a good idea to do any of that. Do not do that. And now looking back of that, I'm like, man, this is so dumb. What would have happened? yeah, that was a lot of fun to make then, because I remember having a very fun crew to be a part of the 48. I had a person from work. I told one of my coworkers at Boeing at the time about a 48-hour film project, and he never was really interested in filmmaking. And I told him about it. He's like, oh, I want to try that. So I had like one of my coworkers star in the movie, and he was great because, you know, none of us knew what we were doing. So obviously he was great. So it was a lot of fun making that one.
One of my favorites of yours was Sister's Revenge.
Oh, yeah. That's the B one.
Every cautious parents watched that endlessly. They thought it was the greatest thing ever made.
And it was the fastest one for us to make, because at that point I figured out how to shoot out of sequence. I mean, it takes a while. Filmmaking is pretty simple when you know what you're doing. But, you know, it's very difficult. So I was like, okay, so I don't have to shoot everything in order. Okay, and so I figured out how to make that. And we shot that movie in literally, shot that sketch video. We shot the sketch video in like under 3 hours, maybe like 2.5. And it was very fast because like we only had 3 angles or so, like, you know, 3 major angles in that in the sketch video. And just constantly,
oh god, that one was funny. We'll have to I'll have to post a link to it in the show notes. Oh man, I could just watch it endlessly. I'm cracking up every single time. It was so funny.
Yeah, it's bizarre. it's a strange one, and I love that the people who I've filmed it with, they kind of went along with it.
Cindy and your sister was in it.
Our friend Dina was in it, and it was kind of like our first time working with them, or one of our first projects we worked together. And they were like, okay, what are we doing? And I was like, oh, you're just staying here and do this, blah, blah. And they're like, okay, well, that's weird. Sure, let's see what's going to happen. And with the power of edit, everything worked out.
You made a fun cameo in it.
Yeah, I made a fun cameo. It was pretty strange, but I kind of had to tell people just to trust me on this one and just roll with the punches and don't worry about looking too silly, because this is a whole project. And I'm just glad that people worked. And Simone was in it. And they all became like, you know, very good actors and make it working in the bigger projects. And so it's interesting to see where all the people went and what become.
These things. So you've done a bunch of 48s. Mm-hmm. And eventually you left your job at Boeing.
Yeah, I had to take a leap because I was thinking that it was time to go somewhere else, because I felt like my career, the 48 film project really screwed up my life plans. I was hoping to go like, you know, Boeing, finish up my university, get a degree and go into like NASA or something like that. That was my goal. And then this comes in along the way, and I make Sister's Revenge. I could have been scientist, man, who like broke, like, who like who created the colony on Mars, and instead of start making like a weird prison themed movies. Yeah, I was thinking like, how can I turn like this weird little crazy passion of mine go from very good secure job of building airplanes, and how can I dive into the world of freelancing, which was
you and I talked about that a lot when you were thinking about making the transition.
It's scary because I'm not, you know, I was 28, 29, you know, approaching 30. That's when your biological clock starts like, okay, we gotta start settling down a little bit. You had your fun, you know. Now it's time to live, like, you know, to live as an adult. And here I am trying to change a career in the middle of it into something that something that, you know, by if you're not careful enough, you can screw up a lot of stuff. You can become, you know, couldn't have any clients. Or anything. It's, so many factors could go wrong.
But
luckily that was not the case most of the time on my end.
You'd been doing some freelance stuff here and there while you were still working at Boeing. Yeah. So you,
it was the hardest stuff. It
yeah,
was the
you weren't going job, yeah. into like a total
no
cold
no.
calling for clients from no. day on day one.
Yeah, I didn't just throw my head in from Boeing and just left and be like, okay, well, try to do that. No, there was a lot of prep work, a lot of doubt. I mean, it took me probably what is it, a year and a half to be able to.
You were planning that for a while,
To put my feet on the ground, secure, and be like, okay, now I can jump in. Still, probably pull a little bit. I probably still jumped off literally the airplane a little too early to pull that cord, but it was an interesting transition. And I remember telling people at work, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this full time. And we were like, dude, you dumb.
Idiot.
Like, you don't do that. Don't do that. And I took the, it was during the layoff at Boeing start coming up. There was like a lot of talk about layoffs. And I was like, you know what? If it's time to go right now, I think it's going to be a good time for me to jump on this layoff train. Like, you know, they were looking for volunteers and I was not really passionate about working, you know, in that industry. And there's so many people who wanted to stay at Boeing before. And they were very nervous about like, hey, I have my family to feed, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? Might save somebody a job, you know?
Yeah.
And if I'm going to do it right now, I should do it right now. So it was me and then like, you know, a handful of people in their 60s and 70s who were leaving Boeing as well. And one of the guys approaches to me. He's like, you know what? I heard that you were leaving Boeing with the as a retirement, quote unquote, and that kind of inspired me to take a retirement as well because I work here for, you know, 40 years, blah blah blah, and I see you going off doing your thing, and I kind of want to follow what you're doing, and I'm going to leave as well. And I was like, oh, that's not my intention, but let's do it.
Heavy shit right there.
Yeah. So it's a lot of doubt. Was thinking, you know, maybe it's not going to happen. But you have to make sure that all the things that you're afraid of, you can be ready for it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and then you transitioned into a full-time job.
So the whole idea, what happened was like, when I was leaving Boeing, I couldn't just leave Boeing, like, you know, I'd just be like, okay, let's go do freelancing, you know, let's figure out how to make money with this stuff. No, I figure out like, no, I got to have some kind of a contract with somebody who I'm going to be secured for at least a year of some kind of an income. And I went to one of the clients that I work with, you know, that already for like 3 or 6 months already. And I told the client, hey, you know what, I'm doing all this little side gigs. And not giving enough time for you. So how about we're going to have like quote unquote exclusive contract just with you guys for a year. You will guarantee me 2 or 3 projects a week or something like that, you know, with this amount of money a week. So we just kind of secure our financial stuff, sign the contract. And for a year, I just worked under this contract as a full-time video person, which was, I felt so cool doing that. Now I'm looking back and I'm like, man, that is, it's kind of silly and dangerous, but you know what? Why the heck not? But then
worked
I just
out. Kinda, I mean, that
yeah,
was,
it worked out. I had
that
to
was a
my,
pretty cool job you had.
It was a lot of fun.
A lot of work, yeah, but
a lot of work. But you know, it comes down to you not. It everything comes down to not waiting and sitting there and waiting for stuff to come to you. You kind of have to search for the stuff and create your own path. Like, you know, for example, I was like, hey guys, I see you guys don't have any video production team. Here's my plan on how I would like to, if I was a part of this company, here's my plan. How can I grow this stuff? How can I implement myself into your company? So instead of sitting there waiting for them to post a job, I kind of quote unquote
made one.
Yeah, made one. It's like, hey, this is why you need, you know, video person. Make a. So yeah, if you just sit and just kind of like, oh, somebody's gonna call me, like nobody's gonna do that. Nobody's gonna know who is Dima Levanchak is. Like, no. So just go do yourself stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And just kind of have to. I hate the word hustle because I feel like it's just not a good word, hustle, because hustle, it kind of like you're throwing people under the buses and everything, but you don't hustle. You just work with people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just figure out what they want and how can you use your skills and you as a person to help them to get what they want. So,
yeah. Are you allowed to talk about the company you were working for at the time?
Of course. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Because you were working for Funko.
Yeah. I worked for Funko. Yeah. They're a collectible company that, you know, create a little big head, black eyes figures. And, you know, what was really helpful was that my knowledge, my experience with 48 film projects where I made videos on no budget, no money. The company that, you know, became my first company, work full time, had no budget, had no money for anything except for paying me. They're like, we have like this one camera, I think it was T3i camera, mm-hmm. and we have a H4 recorder. Good luck. We need content. And I was like, okay, well, I am very well aware of what I can do with this stuff. And let's make some videos.
Not too far from what you were working with on the 48s.
Exactly. My 48, well, I had T2i on the 48 and H4 recorder.
I think everyone's had a Zoom H4n.
Yeah, everybody.
I still have mine.
Yeah, yeah. The indestructible yeah. machine. They're like Nokia.
That thing survived going on tour with Culture Shock.
There you go. Oh, my gosh. If he can go through Culture Shock tour, it can take a beating.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still see people coming up, like, you know, still using it. So it's,
yeah, it works. Nice. It's a good little recorder.
Yeah. So that's, you know, comes to the point to my personal, like, you know, I was never really a gearhead for video productions. I know some people really enjoy this kind of things. Not to me. I had a Canon camera with Nikon lens on it. And everybody's like, oh, this is weird, this is rude, or something like that. I'm like, I don't care, it has a record button on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I have something to say with this thing, then just hit record, let's go. So gear was never like my strongest suit.
Well, I mean, the Funko thing, that took you all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, yeah.
Text you, where are you now? Oh, I'm in New York, I'm in San Diego.
It's I feel like a luck had to do a lot with this because, like, you know, it was still a small company that need to establish itself some, you know, in the pop culture.
No, it's like 20 years old at that point.
It's 20 years old, like, yeah, but it's like exponential growth. Like, you know, nothing happens and all of a sudden, boom, you're on top. And it was like a lot of really cool projects, like having like my video play like in a Times Square, like
so cool.
It was like all the screens like lit up with all like with the video I made, like every single screen around Times Square. And I was standing around, I was looking, I was like literally like 5 months ago, I was working at, you know, at Boeing at that point, like building airplanes. So now I'm standing in Times Square, I have my phone out, like I was like, oh, let me do the selfie shot. And I was like, holy crap, this is so, it was such a rush.
I remember, I believe it was San Diego Comic Con. You're like, oh, you have to watch the Funko after party thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm watching it going, okay, why am I watching this? Why am I watching this? This is like, you know, not my thing. Even though, you know, I love Funko and I love their products. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I watching this? Ooh, Kirk Hammett. Metallica, yes. But even better was afterwards when Hillary was talking to Kirk Hammett. Because
you did not expect that, huh?
I did not expect that. And, you know, I'm such a huge Metallica fan. And I think, you know, Kirk is the coolest one in the band. Mm-hmm. He's just so chill and he'd rather go out and surf than suffer the drama between Lars and James. And also, Hillary's so much taller than him.
And that kind of like, you know, takes, you know, brings back to the whole gear talk because, like I said, I film on very small cameras with no audio gear. It's literally 99% of the time it's just me. So when I approach someone who is, you know, people like that, of, you know, all these quote unquote celebrity people.
Yeah.
When you approach them, say, hey, can I get a quick shot? I am with company Funko. I don't have like a team of six people behind me. So I was like, hey, it's going to be really quickly, like 30 second interview. Can I get one really quick? They're like, sure, you know, let's do it. And I have my gear ready, boom, 48-hour style. Let's go. Like, you know, let's make a quick interview. And I've seen other companies like, oh, can we get an interview? Okay, yeah. Can you come back like 2 hours because we have to set up the lighting and all this stuff? And this is not, like, nobody has time for that at the conventions. So
guerrilla marketing video.
You gotta go fast, you know, and that's where 48 really helped me out with, like, just that mindset. You gotta be ready to film, and you gotta be fast, invisible, because when you shoot 48, I know people are saying, like, you know, had to find locations and everything, but you don't have permits to shoot, to film stuff. Yeah. So you gotta be very quick, very discreet. So that's how.
Very polite.
Very extremely polite, you know. It's so all this ego checks gotta go out the window.
Yeah,
like, have no egos when you're doing this stuff, especially. But yeah, you just I feel like most of my knowledge of filmmaking came from 48. The discipline of 48 Film Project.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a career out of it now. You're a homeowner. You're married. You got a new dog. I see. 3 guitars and a bass and a drum kit. And
oh, yeah. Like, I really kind of just went into the whole creative person, especially during COVID. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to live only once. Let's just see how far this weird mindset is going to take me.
Well, yeah. I remember it was 2 years ago. About 2 years ago at this time, you texted me. You're like, hey, can you help out with, you know, editing some music video stuff? And I was like, yeah, sure. That'd be fun. I love editing to music. I'll never forget. Max is like, okay, I'm doing work for this band. You ever heard of a band called Anthrax? And my jaw just hit the floor. Like, have you ever heard of a band called Anthrax? Ask to me. I was probably listening to, you know, the Sound of White Noise while I was getting the text, you know. Like, what the hell? Like, yeah, I've been working with Charlie. I'm like, what the hell? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just freaked out. And like, I got 3 videos to do. And
yeah, I just need some help with this stuff. Because, you know, once you start getting, you know, submerged in this, I don't want to say, industry, I guess. I don't know. Once you get submerged in this area,
field.
You start meeting very interesting people, and regardless where they at in this field location, like you always want to just people are very interesting creatures. You know, you always want to talk to people and learn more about them, and you never know where things might take you. You know.
Well, it turns out, I mean, Charlie is just such a cool dude.
Cool guy. Yeah.
You know, we're just, you know, texting with him, emailing. Mm-hmm. And did those 2 videos, edited I Am the Law and mm-hmm. Madhouse, which is like, oh my God, 15-year-old me would not believe this. There's Scotty and on my computer. Oh my God, there's Joey Belladonna. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a lot of fun to make these videos.
And then you were busy on something, and Charlie had a U2 song, City of Blinding Lights,
yep,
that he was doing with Frank, and I remember getting the text from Charlie like, hey, can you help out? Yeah, I'm doing this U2 song with Frank, and do you know who Mark Osageda is? And I'm like, oh my God, the secret death angel. Yes, first mosh pit I was ever in was at a death angel show in Mountain View, California in 1987, you know. And all of a sudden I'm texting with Frank, Mark, and Charlie and just going, what the hell is going on? This is
how did this happen? And it's just this stuff like this just kind of, you know, just I don't want to say just like kind of happen. It's all relationships, it's all friendship that you build. Like,
yeah.
You know, while going somewhere, like, you know, it's not a cookbook. You know, like, there's no cookbook on how do you make this kind of happen. It's just like,
yeah.
You kind of learn as a progress. And I think once again, I'm going to be tooting this 48-hour film project horn because I believe in it. Because like when you first start making your videos, you cannot pay anyone. Obviously, for the rules, you cannot pay anyone for 48 project. So, and making movies is pretty difficult. It's a very tasking task. Mm-hmm. Tasking stuff. So you got to be able to learn how to talk to people. You learn very quickly where your place is at in a hierarchy of the team. You're not like this, I am the top end Jesus kind of a person. I'm more of a helper. Yeah. What, how can I help my team to succeed?
It's a collaborative art
form. Yeah. And you kind of learn how to talk to people properly. And you learn that, you know, you learn about egos. You learn you have some bad apples. So you see what not to do. And
yeah, ego always gets in the way. Ego always gets in the way.
And, you know, it's still, and I've been making videos for 13 years now. Holy crap. Yeah. 13 years. And I still have to sometimes check my ego once in a while. But like, you know, why are you arguing about this? Because actually, you know, what's going on over there? You have to think about it, self-evaluate and all that kind of stuff. So it's always work in progress.
Yeah. Yeah. So now you've been working at Amazon for almost 2 years now?
2 years now. Yep. Two years in Amazon. So unfortunately, when pandemic went around the world, I was unfortunately furloughed, kind of sat down for a day or two. And my sister works in Amazon and AWS. And she said, you know what? There's some jobs might be open up over there. Are you interested in, you know, working in Amazon? And I was like, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I'm always kind of like very non-traditional video stuff, you know, run and gun kind of a thing. I mean, if people who know me, that they know I really have a filter on. So that, you know, when I was like, will I be a good fit for the team? And I apply for it and I'll start talking to the team. Like, yeah, we kind of need something like quirky, kind of a little bit different from the traditional videos that we make. And
check,
I was like,
check.
I was like, perfect. I got you guys. So, and then, yeah, just start working at AWS and learn more about gear and more about traditional filmmaking, like how the video production works when you have more than 2 or 3 people, when you have like 15 people on the team. Luckily, I was not exposed to that in my early years of video production, because I would probably assume this is how videos only been made when you have 15 people on the team or whatever it is, you know. Dedicated camera operator, dedicated like scripty, you know, all this stuff.
Me is your assistant editor.
Assistant editor. Like, Kirk, I need help with this. Can you come in to help with the edit? You're like, absolutely. So
that was a crazy time too, because that was pre-vaccination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we were working at one of the studios downtown Seattle, and we had to get our temperature checked every time we came in. And I remember they had the hand sanitizers everywhere, which is great. I think that just made everyone feel a lot safer. But they had the stuff that was made by one of the local distilleries, so it just smelled like booze. And I was worried, like, every night driving home, because I had, you know, just there's so much of it around. I'd like smear it on my mask just to help disinfect the mask, and like, I hope I don't get pulled over because I smell like a fucking distillery right now.
Your eyes are red from editing. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but like, you know, I'm still using all this stuff, all the 48-hour discipline. Still, a lot of projects coming up where it's like, okay, we have minimal gear, we need to go fast, as big as, you know, as big as Amazon Web Services are.
Yeah,
we still have some projects that be like, hey, let's do a quick one. And
yeah,
I feel so comfortable doing this stuff. Just like, give me the camera, you, me, and talent, let's go. You know, we're gonna run and gun something really quick.
Well, I think it's a really important point, you know, because I think a lot of people, when they're young, they're like, I'm going to move to LA and become, you know, a famous actor, a famous director. And if someone has that dream, you know, I wish them success for that.
Yep.
But you do need to, you know, learn your shit. But also, I think it's really important to know that, you know, like you and I aren't going to, you know, you bought a house up in Everett. We bought a house down here in Burien. We're not leaving. We like it here, and great friends and family. And my wife would never want to move to LA or Atlanta. And she has a career that she really enjoys. And we are afforded stability largely on the back of that. But I still get to work in the field using skills. Yeah. And I have the freedom to work on things that I really want to, like, you know, the podcast now. I'm really enjoying doing this, and mm-hmm. you know, the friends that I'm talking to, the new people I'm meeting as a result of it. But I think the 48 can really help someone generate a career, generate and maintain a career using their skills in the mm-hmm. field.
Yeah, totally. And like, you know, there's nothing wrong with people wanting to move to LA to pursue their dreams.
No, of
you
course
just kind of have to like, you just figure out like the risk and the reward system. Like, you know,
exactly.
Do you really want to roll your dice on that? And I mean, if a person is 18 years old, fresh out of high school or whatever it is, like, sure, why not give it a shot? You know, go in there and see what's going to happen. You never know. But like, I just knew in my case, I was in my mid-20s. I was like, nobody's gonna give me a camera. Be like, get out of here. Like, you know, a 25-year-old that already has a 10-year experience on me.
Yeah.
Be like, okay, you want what? You want to film something? Get out of here, you know? So you kind of have to be realistic about stuff. And
yeah.
And I feel like if I wanted to move to LA, because I did want to go over there, but I wanted to go for different reasons. I wanted to go to LA because I felt like it was more like a crutch and an excuse mm-hmm. why I was not, quote-unquote, successful. It's like, oh, but if I'm going to move to LA, I'm suddenly going to become like this famous director or video guy. And I'm luckily that didn't happen because I would probably crush and burn over there very quickly. I had to figure out how to actually make things with stuff that you have.
Well, and even in a city like Los Angeles or Atlanta or New York, where there are the industry works on such a more massive scale.
Yes.
You know, if you get down there and your goal is to be a director of major motion pictures or mm-hmm. television, you know, those opportunities can be there if you put in the work and meet the right people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's entirely possible. But even if it doesn't happen at the level you're expecting, you can, the industry there is so huge. You know,
you
watch any television show and just look at the credit scroll. All those people are getting paid.
Everybody's getting paid. So, yeah.
And the commercials.
So different paths to get to those careers as well.
And, you know, you just want to pick a place where you want to live and carve out a living in that space. And, you know, for me and for Kasha, it's here in the Seattle area. And I get to use my skills and the social and professional connections mm-hmm. I've made to produce this podcast, to run the 48, and to pick up work in the editorial realm.
You always got to look for stuff. Like, you can't just sit there and be like, oh, I got to move to LA for this and somebody's going to hand me a project to edit. It's like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, if a person has a very hard time figuring out how to make videos where they're at right now outside of LA, they will probably have even harder time inside LA just because of how much competition there is and how many people are going to be like, looking at you and be like, you don't have the skills, you know. But then again, you know, I've never moved over there, so I can't really know. They're just my personal observations from the stories that I hear and things that I see what happens to some of my friends who did go there and see the outcome of stuff. Just because you want something doesn't mean you're going to get it. You know? Doesn't matter how bad you want.
Yeah. If you're a filmmaker in Seattle, you have a fair number of friends in LA or Atlanta that have moved there. And I can't think of many examples of someone who's just like, boom, blown up.
Yeah, exactly.
But almost everyone who's serious about their craft has built a living and, mm-hmm. you know, achieved a certain level of, you know, professional recognition and financial stability to maintain working in it. And, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and, you know, two of my favorites are Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend and Smartless. And when they're talking to, you know, people like Tina Fey or Michael Che, all these famous people, you know, when they talk about their success, there's a lot of work that went into it.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of work.
The overnight success, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It does not work.
Yeah. You know, just the Tina Fey's journey to SNL, you know, that took a while. And there's a lot of work doing Second City in Chicago and then writing. And
it's really interesting, guys. Like, you know, I talked to my dad about, like, he, like, we had one time to just sit down. My dad's like, you know, well, how can I learn what you do? Like, is it, can I do what you do? And I was like, working for Amazon for video editing. I was like, absolutely you can. He's like, well, can I just learn it really quick and, you know, and get a job in 6 months? I'm like, well, you're going to have to put in like 5-6 years of unpaid yeah. work and put in the grind. Like, this is not overnight thing. Like, remember, I told him, yeah. my dad's like, remember when I was like working at nighttime trying to edit stuff like that? And you're like, go to sleep, blah, 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 blah. Why are you still up? And he calls me. He's like, you still up? And I was like, no, I'm trying to do my thing here. And, but yeah, people for some reason just forget how much work goes into this quote unquote successful field career, you know?
Well, you really have to, put in the time, not only understanding the basics mm-hmm. of your craft, but you have to develop a kind of a skill to adapt because things yep. change so quickly.
So quickly, yes.
You know, I remember when Final Cut Pro jumped the shark, mm-hmm. going from like the leading nonlinear video editing to mm-hmm. whatever the hell it is now. I'm like, I can't continue with this. I need to learn something new. And I dabbled in Premiere, but you know, I didn't need to go take a course to learn Premiere yeah. because I'd learned the fundamentals of editing and how the software generally works. And I haven't, like right now, I still don't use Resolve as a primary editing platform. But if I had a client that said, okay, this needs to be done in Resolve, yeah, that first gig might take a little longer. But because I've spent so much time editing, I understand how, you know, editing works.
Yeah, you get the rhythm. You get the rhythm
yeah. and you learn how to learn. And I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, learning always goes on. Learning yeah. always happens. And even right now, you know, I'm working. I make sure that, you know, I do dedicate some time off, you know, once a week when I sit down for a few hours and I'll look up a new stuff that come out.
Yeah,
so, you know, all these new features that, you know, Premiere has that really speeds up the workflow, you know.
Yeah.
You always have to be updating and learning how you need to learn how to learn.
Exactly.
And this is what the school is for. The school yeah. is to teach you how to learn, not what you're learning.
Exactly. And it's funny, over time, you know, you find your groove. And if someone asked me to code an HTML table mm-hmm. now, no, I couldn't do it.
Dude, for some reason they steal my memory of how to make yeah. table. The table, then you do like TR, then TD, and then you all this. Oh my gosh, why is this in my head?
Yeah.
Get out of here. with video production people, why are we talking about HTML? But surprisingly, you know, like all this knowledge generates, like, you know, even when I was studying physics and math, I had to use one of the formulas for After Effects to create like a little effect of a bouncing ball. So I had to be, okay, well, how do I parabola? Oh yeah, there's quadratic formula for this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And so I had to use my math knowledge on that.
Yeah, yeah.
On After Effects. I'm like, I didn't know this is going to happen. Yeah, it's just strange how your knowledge can manifest, you know,
yeah,
manifest
yeah.
itself.
Well, hey, I've got to wrap this up.
Okay.
So, Dima, thank you so much. I'm sure we could have gone on for another 5 hours very easily.
Oh, easily. I love talking to you, man. I love shooting shit with you.
But, you know, it's great to hear your perspective on this, that you could come from zero knowledge, basically. Yeah.
And not like non-teenager, you know,
yeah,
25 years old with yeah. your competition and 35. I mean, this applies to like being 35 years old, 45. Doesn't matter which age you are. You
know, yeah.
It's all applicable. You can change stuff where you're not happy and go into your dream.
Yeah.
Or you later on find out that this is your dream. I thought my dream was to be staring at the stars. No, it's actually to make movies about exploding titty milk. That's a Sister's Revenge reference. I said titties milk.
Well, thank you, Dima.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me, my friend.
48 hours to go. If you're looking for a hero, then this is the show. Where did they come from? What do they know? It's an origin story. Let's go.
48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories is a production of Media Without Borders, the Seattle 48 Hour Film Project, and Heads Up Productions.